an interesting source for that, which Chazal say that macholos asuros, if someone eats non-kosher food, metamtem es halev, means it has an actual effect on the lev, on the heart of a person. Heart is always associated with sensitivity. And it says that if a woman is not able to nurse her child and she has to hire a wet nurse, she should give the nurse kosher food only, even though a Gentile has no restrictions concerning kosher food. But if she's going to eat non-kosher food, it will affect the child's heart, it will affect his nature. Says the Ramban, we can see, as we can use as a source, the smichus between the last pasuk in Parsha Shmini, lehavdil bein hatomei uvein hatohor. You have to differentiate between tom and tohor. Venachayu anecheles, kosher food, uvenachayu shaloisi ochel, non-kosher food. Daber abnei Yisrael leimor ishoki sazria v'yoldo zochor. And that will affect, by the smichus, you can tell that what you eat will affect the type of a child you are going to have. That's what the Ramban says as a source, the smichus, between the last pasuk in Parsha Shmini and the second pasuk in Parsha Tazria, teaches you that what you eat affects the nature of the child. Now, we continue pasuk Dalet. Ushloishim yoim ushloishes yomim, they shave bidmei tohoro. For 33 days she sits in the tohor blood. Says Rashi, they shave. First of all, the word they shave doesn't make sense. They shave usually means to sit. What does it mean here? She should sit in her pure blood. What does it mean by that? Says Rashi, teishev means here. Ein teishev el loshen akevo, kmoi vateishu bekodesh. Le'akev means to hold back. She's held back, right? That's what, how Rashi learns. Teishev, she's in a situation that can be called that she's held back. Held back from what? This one thing that has to be understood. Why is she held back? Second statement in Rashi, bidmei tohoro. What does it mean, demei tohoro? Says Rashi, an incredible thing. During those 33 days, afal pi sheroyo tehoiro, she's in the exact opposite state of the first 7 days. The first 7 days, the law is, if you take a look in the Rashi, in Pasuk Bet, Kimeini das dvoy, the word kimeini das dvoyso titmo, says Rashi, keseder kol tumo hamuro benido. When she gives birth, she has the same tumo as a nido. Metamei tumas betumas leido vaafilu niftach hakever below dam. So listen to that opposite. During the first 7 days, even if she sees no blood, she has the halacha of a nido 100% without any blood. And during the 33 days following the 7 days, even if she does see blood, says Rashi, she's in a state of taro. The blood during the 33 days is not metame. You hear the extremes. In neither situation is she normal. When does she reach a state of normalcy? Only after she reaches the end of both periods. Here, only after the 40th day, that was the 7 plus the 33, then she goes back to a state of normalcy. In other words, if she sees blood, she is tomei, and if she doesn't see blood, she's tor. That's the state of normalcy. But the first two periods, the first one of 7 days and the second one of 33 days, she's in a state of, it's an abnormal state. In the first, because she's so tome that even if she doesn't see blood, she's tome. And in the second period of 33 days, even if she sees blood, she doesn't have to go to the mikveh. Once she went to the mikveh at the end of the 7 days after birth, she does not have to go to the mikveh, even though she sees blood during the 33 days. You hear this, Allah? Now, by a girl, it's the same situation, but doubled. Everything multiplied by two. Ve'im nekevot seileid. And if she gave birth to a girl, then v'tomosh v'aim kenidoso. Her state of impurity, even though she saw no blood, even though it was a clean birth, is 2 weeks. And how long is her state of absolute extreme purity, that even if she sees blood, she's not tomei? 66 days. V'shishim yom v'sheshes yomim teishev al dmei tohoro. Okay? Now, what happens at the end of this period? As I told you, when she reaches a state of normalcy, only then can she come into the Beis Hamikdash. So it's very interesting. During the 33 days for a boy, or the 66 days for the girl, she is tohor as far as the dam is concerned, meaning she's not tomei. She can have relations with her husband, but she cannot come into the Beis Hamikdash. You hear? She can't come to the Beis Hamikdash. To the Beis Hamikdash, she can only come at the end of the period, after the 40 days, or after the 80 days for the girl. Yeah.
Does she go to the mikvah on the 39th or 40th day? Or 80th day?
No. No, she doesn't have to. All she has to do, in Pasuk Vov, Uvim loisi mei toro, levino levas, tovi keves ben shnosoi le'oilo, you bring an oilo, and a yoinoi tor lechatos, al pesach oil moyed, that's all. Right? So that's what her, the end of her coming back to normal. That's the end of the period of coming back to normal. She comes back to normal after 40 days, and by a girl it's again 40, but it's double 40, because everything is doubled. As I told you yesterday, the 7 is doubled, the 33 is doubled, so of course it's 80. But basically we are talking about 7 and 33, that by a girl is doubled. Now, of course, I mean, nobody can claim to know exactly the secrets of the Torah, but we definitely can see connections with this number 7 and the number 33 and the number 40. And the connections clarify a little bit the picture. As I told you, we consider the experience of giving birth a godlike experience, when in a way we can say, kaviyochel, we can say, man does God's job. Right? You know, the Chazal call the parents the partners of God in the creation of children. Shloisha shutufim bo'odom, says the Gemara. There are three partners in a child. God, the father, and the mother. So of course, the father is a partner, but in an external form, right? Meaning, he doesn't really experience the feeling of giving birth. That's a woman's job. In other words, in that sense, she is having a godlike experience of giving life. So, after such an experience, when you are on such a high, to come down to normal is always very difficult. Always, when the Jews were by Har Sinai, the experience was so overwhelming that coming down is so dangerous. It's so dangerous, the coming down, that if you are not careful, it can destroy you. Coming down from a very elevated experience is very dangerous. It's not that you're high, so I'm coming back to normal. No, sometimes it's safer to stay normal than go up high, because then the falling down can be very, very dangerous. Now, we know what happened to the Jews, right, after Har Sinai, when they came down, right? You know how long is the period of, you know, whenever we talk about drastic changes, you know what the Maharal says, what number do we always encounter? Always the number 40, he says. Always the number 40, when we see drastic changes, the world, the corrupt world that has to be cleansed up, cleansed out, after by the Dor HaMabul. Takes 40 days for the Dor HaMabul to uproot all the evil. to destroy everything. It takes 40 years for the Jews to uproot all the negative characteristics that they acquired in Egypt. It takes 40 days for Moshe Rabbeinu to become like a Malach Elohim, like an angel, to be able to receive the Torah. Adjustments from something from one extreme to another always takes 40. It's always related to the number 40. It says that when does a fetus become alive? When does it reach a level that we can say, yes, he's partially alive? 40 days. Before 40 days, the Gemara says it's meyo be'almo, it's just water. It's potential life, but it's nothing there. It takes 40 days from nothing becoming something. That is always 40. It's always associated with the number 40. So, coming back from a very important experience to normalcy also it takes 40. If the Jews after Har Sinai would have been able for 40 days to maintain that level, the world wouldn't be the way we know it today. The point is that on the 40th day they were destroyed by the eagle. The eagle happened on the 40th day. Had they waited one more day, that would have been alright. Now, as long as you have the 40 days of adjustment, then it's okay. Meaning, to come back to normal, you needed 40 days also. From Har Sinai, you also need 40 days. Now, the woman has to come back to normal again, right? From the state of giving birth, which we said it's a godlike experience of giving life, to normal, she needs 40 days. So, the first period of those 40 days, it's a period of tumah. The life has left her, and that life that left her left a void, a vacuum. That vacuum is filled with tumah. So for the first 7 days, it's full of tumah, right? Now, after the 7 days, she has to go back completely to taharo, and then she will become normal. But that process lasts 33 days. The way back lasts 33 days. Okay? Now, so we have here the number 7 and the number 33. 7 is related with the process of nature, natural processes, natural developments, natural cycles are always associated with the number 7. And the number 33 is to come back from those natural cycles to the level you want to reach, the number 33. Now, you may have sensed it. We are going right now between Pesach and Shavuot. The number 7 is significant and the number 33 is significant. And it's not a coincidence at all. Where's the number 7? Sphere is 7. 7 weeks, right? 7 times 7. The number 7 is crucial to the whole spirit period. That's why it's not enough to count the days. You have to count the weeks and the days, right? Today is 2 weeks and this amount of days. The weeks, it's 7. And all of a sudden, we have a number 33 in there that we know little things about it, but we don't really understand it. What am I talking about? Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is very, very difficult to understand. What is it doing? What is it doing there? And we don't really know what it's doing there. We don't really know. All we know is that even though the period between Pesach and Shavuot became at a certain point in history a sad occasion for the Jewish people, even though originally it was a very happy occasion. As a matter of fact, the Ramban in Parshas Emor says that the period between Pesach and Shavuot was a period like Chol HaMoed. Like Chol HaMoed. It was a happy occasion. It was a festive occasion. Because Pesach was considered like the first day of the holiday. Shavuot was the last day of the holiday. And one long, semi-festive occasion like Chol HaMoed was the period of Sphira. When did the Sphira become a sad occasion? A cause for mourning? That happened relatively lately, right? Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. Now, What does it say concerning Talmidei Rabbi Akiva? They died between Pesach and Shavuot. Well, we don't know exactly how long they died, but their death is related with Lag BaOmer, that on Lag BaOmer they didn't die. So one tradition says that they died up to Lag BaOmer, and from Lag BaOmer and onwards they didn't die at all. This is why Lag BaOmer is a festive occasion. Some say no, it's not true. They died 33 days during this sphera, and on Lag BaOmer they didn't die, but after Lag BaOmer they started dying again. So we have different traditions, but everybody agrees to one thing: Lag BaOmer is special. It's a festive occasion because they didn't die. Right? Significant. What is there in Lag BaOmer that's so special? Then the Balei Kabbalah come and they tell us another story concerning Lag BaOmer that we don't even know how it fits. They tell us that, you know what the significance is of Lag BaOmer? It's the yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Did you hear that? So we light the fires, and some say, well, the fires represent the fire of the Torah of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, because you know that there is a tradition that he was in a cave for many years, in a cave, and when he came out of the cave, the Torah that he had learned was so intense, so powerful, that everything in his way got burnt like fire, right? Then he had to come back. And he happened to have died on Lag BaOmer. So it's a festive occasion. Festive occasion. When do we find that a yahrzeit is a festive occasion? Say by a tzaddik. What is the source of that? That by a tzaddik, dying is a festive occasion. What is the source? So the truth of the matter is, this is the source. But before that, we don't find it. We don't consider the death of Moshe Rabbeinu a happy occasion. As a matter of fact, it says that many people fast on the seventh day of Adar, which is the day that Moshe Rabbeinu died. So the Balei Kabbalah say the following: Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has a very special significance for us. Why? What's so special? I mean, there were many tzaddikim and many chachomim. Why do we commemorate specifically the yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Say the Balei Kabbalah the following: Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the main Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. And he survived the so-called plague. We don't even know really what really happened to the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. What was their physical cause of their death? So the Gemara says that they died from a plague called Askero. What is Askero? Some kind of a sickness that affects the throat. That's what the Gemara says. But there is another Gemara that says, what was the spiritual cause for the death of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva? You know what it says? Shelo nohagu kovod ze im ze. They didn't speak to each other respectfully. Which means they didn't talk to each other. It's something that affected their throat. Okay. So that's why they died. Some commentaries say, well, it's just a way of saying that they died because of the plague, but really they died at the hands of the Romans, because the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva joined the revolution against the Romans at the time. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai hid in the cave and he survived the Romans. So the survival of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is what reminds us of the survival of the Jews. The Talmidei Rabbi Akiva died, they died. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai reminds us of the survival of the Jews. More, it says that the sadness of the Jews after the death of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim was greater, it says in Sforim, than by the destruction of the temple. Because when the temple was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, so a building was destroyed. Torah wasn't destroyed. Torah was only transferred. It was transferred from Yerushalayim to Yavne. But when the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva died 70 years after that, or whenever that was, after the destruction of the temple, then the Jews said, oh, that's the end of Torah. It was the survival of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that gave hope to the Jews again. Not only that, there is a statement in the Zohar. The Zohar is the Torah's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that says like this, that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai asks Mashiach, Eimosai ko'osimar. When are you coming? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, probably in a dream, right? In a prophetic dream, in a semi-prophetic dream. He asks Moshiach, when is he coming? And Moshiach answers him, Kesheyofutsu mainoisecho chutzo, which means when the Torah, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, will be learned, that's when Moshiach will come. So in a way, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai represents the opposite of what the death of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva means. The death of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva meant at the time the loss of all hope of any survival, of any redemption. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai represents the redemption of the Jewish people. Okay? Now, what do we see then? That the 7 weeks of Sfira represents the Tumo. In other words, it's nature overcoming, it's nature winning. The death of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, either because of the sickness or because of the Romans, the fact is that nature overcame the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. Nature overcame the sages of Torah. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai represents the fact that that's not the end of everything. There is a way back. Nature is represented by the number 7, right? The way back is represented by the number 33, right? Lag Ba'Omer represents the fact that we are coming back. This is why it's a festive occasion. Lag Ba'Omer is a festive occasion because it's the counterbalance of Sfira. Sfira represents our awareness that everything, that's the end of everything. Talmidei Rabbi Akiva were destroyed. Torah was destroyed in Eretz Yisrael. That's the end of everything. So we say, don't worry about it. There is a Lag Ba'Omer. The Lag Ba'Omer makes up for the 7, which means 7 is the Tuma, 33 is the way back, and together you have 40. Now, this is the idea of the woman who has to get back from that special experience of having a child to normal, to coming back to the Beis Hamikdash, to having a normal life. So first there is the first extreme of complete tumo, the 7 days of complete tumo, even though she sees no blood. That is always represented by the number 7, by nature taking over, tumo, nature. But how does she get back to normal? By going through Shloshim Yoim Ushloshes Yomim, 33 days. 33 is the way back to normal. Okay? Now, added to this, there is another question which is asked. If you take a look in Posuk Vov, it says, Uvim Lois Yemei Tohoro, after the 33 days, again, by a girl it's 66, but the reason why it's 66 is because for every 7 you have 33, right? So when those days are over, she brings keves ben shnosoy le'oilo, she brings a korban oilo, uven yono osor lechatos, and she brings a sin offering. And the question is, you only bring a sin offering when you have sinned. What sin did she commit by having a child? So the Gemara gives some kind of a hazy answer. The Gemara says, well, while she's having the pains of labor, the thought must have crossed her mind that she wishes that she wouldn't have to have any marital relations anymore, because look what it brings, labor pains. So now after the labor pains, that she changes her mind, she has to bring a sin offering for that, which on the surface makes no sense whatsoever. Number one, because what is the value of a vow? So she made a vow that she won't have any relations with her husband, but she never said it. It crossed her mind. A vow that crosses your mind is invalid. It has no value whatsoever. So she has to bring a sin offering because of that. There's something more. So it says in Sforim that, of course, we're not talking about her own personal sin. We are talking about the sin of mankind in general that comes out in labor pains. When does labor pain start as part of the human condition? It was the curse of Chavo. The curse of Chavo is that she will have children in pain. And the question is, we know that all the punishments that God gives is mido keneged mido. It's measure for measure, which means it fits the crime. The punishment fits the crime. Her crime was eating from the Eitz Hadas. In what way does labor pains, right? How is it a mido keneged mido in relation to her sin? On the surface, we don't see it. However, it says in Sforim that the sin of Chavo created strife among human beings. How? It says that when Adam and Chavo were created originally, we spoke about it yesterday, there were a unit. It was, Adam was created as some kind of an androgynous creature, with bisexual, male and female, and God separated them in order that they should be Bosor Echod. In other words, they should experience unity. This is the reason why Adam, who is not aware of the sin when he accepts the fruit of the Eitz Hadas, he doesn't hesitate in taking the fruit, because obviously if Chavo gives it to him, he's going to take it. But why did Chavo give it to him? She already had committed the sin. She had already eaten from the Eitz Hadas. Therefore, she develops the characteristics of selfishness. Remember what Rashi says right there on the spot. Why does Chavo give Adam the fruit? Because she says, if I have to suffer the consequences, he shouldn't. Let him suffer the consequences too. Why should I be the only one? Selfishness, jealousy. That is something which is created by the sin, by the eating of the Eitz Hadas. Comes out that the eating of the Eitz Hadas creates the barrier between Adam and Chavo. Now, the barrier between Adam and Chavo is not only between Adam and Chavo. It's the barriers between among human beings in general. So, who are the next people who come into the world after Adam and Chavo? Cain veHevel, the new generation. That gap that was created between Adam and Chavo is created between one generation and the other. Right? That gap, the painfulness of the changing of generations, is represented by the pain of labor. Okay? Now, we have a rule that says that all mitzvos in the Torah are pleasant. Drocheo darchei Noah. The Torah won't give you any mitzvah that by its very nature is difficult. Right? It may develop into a difficult situation, like if somebody has to walk 10 miles to get kosher food. It doesn't mean that eating kosher is difficult. Under the circumstances, it becomes difficult. But it's not essential to eating kosher food that it should be difficult. Why? Because drocheo darchei Noah. With two exceptions, there are two mitzvos that are painful, that by their very nature, the Torah says to do something painful. What is it? Bris milah is painful for the child. This is why in Chutzlores they don't make shechionu. The father doesn't say shechionu because it's painful to the child. And giving birth, it's a mitzvah and it's painful, right? And the Torah says it's a painful experience. Of course, like the commentaries say, both mitzvahs are performed by a person who doesn't feel personally the pain. By giving birth, according to the halacha, a woman has no mitzvah of periyoveribia, only the man. Right? By a child under normal circumstances, who circumcises him? The father. Right? So the child is pain, he doesn't have the mitzvah yet. It's the father who has the mitzvah. But in any case, it's a mitzvah that involves pain. Why these two exceptions? Because they both represent the connections between generations. Bris milah is the connection between one Jewish generation to the other Jewish generation. That's what we said yesterday. That's why Bris milah is in the reproductive organ, because it guarantees the continuity of the Jews, right? But that continuity is always painful, because there is always a gap between generations. That gap between generations is caused by the sin of Adam v'Chavo. Now, when the sin of Adam v'Chavo will eventually become rectified, when will that be? By Yemos HaMashiach, then what will be rectified? The gap between generations. The description of Imos HaMashiach in Malachi, it says, Eliyahu HaNovi will come, and what will he do? The Heshiv Lev of Voice Al Bonim, Lev of Bonim Al Avoisom. What does that mean? The closing of the gap between generations that was caused by the sin of Adam and Eve. Now, through the rectification of that, which is Eliyahu HaNovi and Mashiach, that will, those gaps will be closed. Okay, so you see that the painfulness of the transference of one generation to the next, that painfulness comes out in labor pains, which means that the labor pain is closely related to the sin of Adam and Chava. Okay, so now, when the Gemara says that the reason why a woman has to bring a sin offering after giving birth is because of the labor pains, the Gemara doesn't mean her own personal sin. The Gemara means the universal sin of Adam and Chava that we are still carrying. That's what it means. Now, because of that, because that process of giving birth and coming back to normal life represents the whole cycle of Klal Yisrael in the world, the sin of Adam and Chava and the eventual Geula, this is the reason why we find here the number 7, which is the pain we have to go through because of the sin of Adam and Chava, we became controlled by nature. Before the sin of Adam and Chava, man controlled nature completely. After the sin of Adam and Chava, we became very vulnerable to nature. If you take a look at the curse of Hashem right after the sin of Adam and Chava, the whole theme of the curse is now you will become vulnerable to nature. That vulnerability to nature is represented by the 7 days of Tumah, because the number 7 always represents Tumah. 33 is our effort to overcome that curse, the curse of Adam and Chava. Okay? So 7 represents the curse of Adam and Chava. The death of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva is our vulnerability to nature, whether to the Roman army or to the sicknesses. Right? That's the number 7. Those are the 7 weeks of Sfira. And the number 33 is our efforts through spiritually, which is the Torah's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, spiritually overcoming our vulnerability. We are vulnerable physically, so spiritually we try to overcome it. That struggle between the physical and the spiritual is the combination of the number 7 and the number 33. Only at the end of this period that puts together the 7, which represents nature, our vulnerability to nature, and the 33, which represents our effort to overcome through our spirit our vulnerability to nature, that combination will lead to normalcy. That is the number 40. Only after she reaches the number 40, only then can she come into the Beis Hamikdash. The Beis Hamikdash represents, of course, the Geula, when she's nigal, when she's redeemed, when she's normal, she's in a state of perfection. And this is very unusual. During the 33 days that she was super tohor, to the point that even if she's so blood, she's not tomei, she's not allowed to go into the Beis Hamikdash. But once she goes back to normal, right? Normal means that if she sees blood, she's tomei, if she doesn't see blood, she's not tomei. Once she comes back to normal, then she can come back to the Beis Hamikdash. Why? Because the whole idea of the 33 is not a normal state. It's not an ideal state. Because it's only a form of overcoming, of struggling against the 7. Which means, the 7 represents the complete vulnerability to nature. 33 is our struggle that we try to overcome nature, which is also not good. The perfect situation is when it can be balanced, when there is shalom, when there is peace between the two, when there is no struggle anymore. That's what's represented by the number 40, and only then can she go into the Beis Hamikdash. Of course, there are a lot of ingredients of chet, golus, and geulah in the whole process of the purification of the woman. Because, of course, the giving birth is going back to the sin of Adam v'Chava. The labor pains is a reenacting of the sin of Adam v'Chava. This is why she brings a Korban Chatos. This is why she has 7 days of impurity. The 7 days representing the downfall of man and he's becoming completely vulnerable to nature. Nature is completely Tomei. She's going through the period of Tomei as a result of the labor. Labor becomes something bad because of the sin of Adam v'Chava. 33 represents man's desire to overcome his vulnerability. That's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. This is why Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, his death, right, is a happy occasion, not because of what, because he died, because of what he left. He left for us the Torah HaKabbalah, that according to the Zohar, that will bring the Geula. That is the limud. Those insights will bring eventually the Geula, like it says in the Zohar itself. This is why it's dafke, it hits to be in the 33rd day of the Omer. It's not a coincidence at all. It fits perfectly. It has to be in the number 33, because that is the number that counterbalances the 7 weeks of Tume, of nature overcoming Torah. Our overcoming of the difficulties of nature is represented by the number of 33. This is why on Lag BaOmer it's a happy occasion. You make weddings, you make parties, in order to show that in spite of the fact that we went through terrible tragedies throughout our history, in every tragedy there was a seed of Geulo. In other words, in every seven, which represents Tume, right, the nature overcoming us, there is always a 33. Right? In the 7 weeks of Sfira, there is always a 33 that will lead us all the way to the Beis Hamikdash. That's what the woman is going through. The 7 days of pain, right after the labor, and then the way back. Of course, the way back is not a perfect state. It's like the Rambam says, in order to go back to normal, it's not enough. If you have a piece of paper and you bend it, right, and you want to make it straight again, it's not enough by just making it straight. You have to go to the other extreme in order that eventually it should be normal. That's exactly what's happening to her. The number 33 can be 100% normal, because it has to overcome the 7. This is why even if she sees blood, it's tohor, right? The 33 even lacks a little bit of sensitivity. It's not even sensitive to blood. Why? Because it has to go to the other extreme in order to overcome the 7, in order to reach the number 40. Yeah, go ahead.
During Sfira, we count 49. Does the number 40 have anything to do with...
Well, the 49 just happens to be, right, 7 times 7. That's all. Meaning, the idea is 7. In other words, the key number of Sfira is the number 7. As a matter of fact, the conclusion is called Shavuos, right? Which is, it's a reference to the number Sheva, which is 7. Meaning the whole idea is the 7, the fact that we had to go through a period of 7, right? And the 33, right, is connected with the 7. Now, it's the number 49 just happens to be 7 times 7. The nature of the number 49 is that because it's 7 multiplied by 7, but the idea is that 7. Okay? Now, I just wanted to add one more thing. How did it happen that such a happy occasion as Sfira, right, all of a sudden became a sad occasion? How did it happen? You know, it says that the whole period of Sfira is a preparation for Matan Torah. That's what it says. It's every day we're coming closer and closer to Matan Torah. The most important part in the readiness to receive Torah is modesty. That's what it says. In order for someone to become a receptacle of Torah, you have to be modest, because anyone who is not modest is as if you have a recipient that's full with something. If it's full of water, how can you add anything else to it? There is already things in it. You have to empty it. In order to empty it, you need complete modesty. Okay? Now, the opposite of modesty is gava. Why is it that Talmidei Rabbi Akiva died? What is it? A lack of anava. In other words, they lack that ingredient to make it possible for them to receive the Torah. Which means, the occasion of Sfira is a happy occasion because it gives us a chance to receive the Torah. But if we are Bale Gava, if we have Gava, in other words, if we lack that modesty, then we turn that happy occasion into a sad occasion. That's exactly what happened by Talmid Rabbi Akiva. And that's why it's fitting that it happened between Pesach and Shavuos. During the period of preparation for Matan Torah, they did the opposite. Of course, in their level, they were great tzaddikim, but we are criticizing them just because they were such a tzaddikim, and they were even criticized for very small things. So, of course, those small things were related to their lack of anava, their lack of modesty. This is why they didn't respect each other, because if you think a lot about yourself, how can you possibly respect somebody else? That was the chesaron of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, and this is why it's fitting that it was during the sphere that it happened. Okay, let's start.